The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Happy Friday. I hope you had a good day today. Weekend coming up for most of us. Well, not all of us, but most of us. Hope it's a good one. We're going to talk about Venus tonight for the first 2 hours with Dr. Raymond Keller, who is back with us. Dr. Keller, PhD, is an expert on all kinds of fascinating things having to do with ET, contactees, Venus itself, and other issues which we've discussed on this program to greater and lesser degrees over a number of months now. It's always fun to have Ray on the program. How are you, Ray?
Fine. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you so much for having me on.
Always a pleasure. And if you look in guests at rents.com, on the left-hand side, you'll see Dr. Raymond Keller, and under his name there are 6 links. We're going to look at those links in the next 2 hours and talk about some of those things as well. I was just looking on Wikipedia, just for fun. Actually, I entered just a general search, Life on Venus. And as most of you know, if you know anything at all about Venus or what we are told about Venus, Venus is completely inhospitable to any kind of water-based life as we know it. 462 degrees Celsius, 735 degrees Kelvin, atmospheric pressure 90 times that of Earth. That's too much. But there may be something else going on up there that we're not being told the full and unvarnished truth about. Maybe it's not so bad up there. Maybe it's more like Earth than they want us to know. You'll notice that Venus is never talked about. Virtually never. Oh, they talk about Mars, they talk about Jupiter. The big storm on Jupiter is turning from red to orange. I believe that was a story I saw a week or two ago. They talk about the sun. They talk about Pluto. They don't talk about Venus. You gotta wonder why. It's a strange thing. Here's another story 2 years ago. Venus may have had a shallow liquid water ocean and habitable surface temperatures for up to 2 billion years of its early history. This from NASA. This type of surface appears ideal for making a planet habitable. There seems to have been enough water to support abundant life, but what happened to it all? And in fact, is the water really all gone? Now we're talking about massive amounts of water on the moon below the surface, frozen, and they're admitting now that Mars has lots of water, so I just wonder why the silence about Venus. It is quite remarkable to write a planet off so completely, so thoroughly, Jupiter is every bit as inhospitable, but they talk about Jupiter quite a lot. Same with Saturn. Ray, what's the deal? Why are they hiding Venus?
Well, they're hiding it because there definitely is something there. The United States, the former Soviet Union, now Russia, the European Union, Japan, they've sent a total of 43 space probes to Venus, costing literally billions upon billions of dollars, more than all the other planets. And yet they don't say very much about it, other than to poo-poo the existence of light there. Yet we see now that some are talking about life and under perfect conditions having arisen there 2 billion years ago, when human evolution itself is only 2.5 million years. So that was plenty of time for 2 billion years was more than enough time for intelligent life to evolved there.
Oh, yeah. This is very interesting when you think about what Ray just said. 43 probes from multiple nations to Venus, more than any other planet? Is that correct? Did I hear you right?
Yes, more than any other one, including the moon, which is astounding in itself. You'd think that the moon, being relatively easy to get to, would be the focus of many more probes. But, well, perhaps it is too, but maybe we don't know about it.
Oh, there's a lot going on the moon, as I think you know and I know and a lot of our listeners know. There's mining, and there's all kinds of activity up there. Not by us, by other people. Well, we're up there too. Now, if you think about it, 43 probes to Venus, a planet that is completely ridiculous to consider for life of any kind that we know and respect, and yet it draws the most interest. So right there, you have to look at the other side of the coin. Well, what's going on here? And Ray has so much information on Venus that it really does open doors. It's a head-scratcher. Why spend all that money, all that time on a planet that is a total loss? Or is it?
It's not a total loss, and it's certainly well-deserving of the respect and investigation of the world scientific community. And in fact, as time goes on, more and more are joining the bandwagon, so to speak, and trying to figure out what's really going on there.
Now, in our earlier visits, we talked about Val Thor and his three crewmates, allegedly from Venus. There are a lot of very interesting details about that. Dr. Frank Strange's book. The name of the book again? Stranger in the Pentagon, was that it?
Yes, The Stranger in the Pentagon. And his first book was Flying Saucerama.
Mm-hmm. Val Thor is a name that I think most of you know by now. And if you look on the right-hand side of the homepage, you'll find a big special feature story about Dr. Ray and all the work he has presented here. You can look at pictures of Val Thor. And apparently he was only seen in public one time, and that was, at far as we know, at Howard Menger's farm at that UFO meeting in 1958 in the summer, correct?
Yes, that is right, on July the 30th. 1958.
Now, when we talk about Val Thor, he was ostensibly, allegedly, reportedly saying to anyone who was listening that he and his crewmates came from Venus, and they apparently went back there. So what do we know after 43 probes have been sent to Venus that we can really support with logic and intelligence, You know, they'll tell us one thing, but what do we really know? I mean, they'll tell us it's got temperatures of 9,000 degrees if they want to, and what are people going to do? Say, yeah, must be too hot. So what's the real deal? That's the question. And some of the pictures that have come back are very, very interesting. The cloud cover on Venus, they're blaming that on the greenhouse effect. It just started a cycle, and it got too hot, and that was the end. The moisture went up there and created a cloud cover, and the radiation, the UV, went through it, bounced back and forth, and raised the temperature so high that whatever was there is long gone. So what do we know about pictures? Now, we've got the links up under your names, and there are some pictures in there somewhere. I forget which link, but maybe you've looked at them and you can tell us.
Yes, I'm trying to locate them on my computer now so I could explain them. But we have some great pictures from the Soviet Venera probes. Initially, uh-huh. It was taken in a 100-degree panorama, sort of in a U-shape.
Right.
But some ingenious researchers have straightened out the pictures over there at the Planetary Society.
Right.
And you could see that the atmosphere is very clear. It extends off into the distant horizon. You could see mountain ranges. And in one of the pictures, it looks like there's some kind of lake in the background, and even with some sort of moss and vegetation. So I thought, wow, this is really an awesome picture.
Right. Now, if you look under Ray's name, the vast Venus conspiracy, look for part three, and click and open that. And there are some pictures there from one or more of the space probes. So part three, the third item down under Dr. Ray Keller and guests, and open that up. You able to do that on your computer right now, Ray?
I've brought up that individual article here from
yeah.
my own file, but yes, I see the one there as the 1982 photo from the Venera 13 probe.
Right. All right, let's look at that. That's very interesting. Now, I don't know how many other images we have from that probe, but if you look at that, it's obviously there are. It's not a pine forest. All right, it's not a tropical glade. It's looking very arid, and it looks like Mars, right?
Yes, and you would think that if everything that they were saying was true about the 93 atmospheres and the only illumination coming from lightning storms or volcanoes,
right?
You know, you wouldn't see a clear sky extending all the way into the horizon like on that picture. And what if a probe from another planet were to come to the Earth and to land in the Sahara or the Mojave?
Or in Los Angeles and look at the sky there. It looks like L.A.
Yes, uh-huh. And it would probably land on some rocky plateau as well. And
uh-huh.
Yeah, so that one picture I thought was tells quite a bit, even though it's confined to that single spot. But then you could see at least two overlapping mountain ranges off in the distance.
Oh yeah, I see them now. How many other pictures from Venera are there running around? Are there very many, or were they few and far between, almost like they were kind of held back, some of them?
Yes, not too many of them. But the picture underneath it is a very good one.
Also from Venera?
Yes, that one is also from Venera, and that's the one where a Tennessee scientist, a member of the Planetary Society, straightened it out. And you could access that one by going to the link that's underneath that, where it says it's a Spanish website.
Okay.
DanielMarin.com.
I got it. All right. So what we're looking at here is part three, under third item under Ray's name. Open that up. Scroll down. You'll see a 1982 photograph from the Soviet Venera 13 probe with clear Venus skies. Well, they're smoggy. All right. Well, big deal. Mountain range, at least one in the distance. A semi-disc in the foreground. That's the lens cap. Is that what that is?
Yes, that was the lens cap.
Uh-huh. All right, and below that we've got three strips. Two of them have demarcations, and the third one is a full panorama. I guess that's looking off the side of the spacecraft and down. Is that what we're seeing?
Yes, that is correct. There were cameras all around that could rotate all around.
Uh-huh. Wonder what those little objects are there on the ground. There are five of them on the left. Look like little packages of some kind.
Oh, and that particular one, they did photograph what was apparently a scorpion-like creature, and that's at the end of the article. And the Soviet, I've heard the Soviet scientists on various interviews talk
uh-huh.
about it, that they were convinced at the time that of the Venera coming in, and that he was still convinced that it was indeed a form of life and was scurrying about there on that desert plateau.
Let's look at this bottom. Black and white picture, the third one. Let's look off to the left. It's dark, the terrain, and then there's a light spot. That light spot almost, I'm not saying it is, but the light spot looks like it could be a pond of some kind. That white, see it?
Oh,
on the left?
Yes.
Just and in from the left boundary.
Oh, yes, and now that picture there is a straightened out complete panorama that was put together by Professor Ted Strick of Roane State Community College in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, from the Planetary Society.
Uh-huh.
And there are restrictions on that photo, but I was able to find it on that Spanish website.
What do you mean restrictions?
There were a lot of restrictions about the prohibiting the republication of it.
Why?
That's a good question. I would like to know. But for the convenience of your listeners, I provided the.
We're going to go to that in just a minute. That link. It's right below these three black and white pictures. But look at the bottom picture. I'll, in fact, look at any of them and look all the way over to the right. Look at the horizon. What do you see? I'll bet you can see 30 or 40 miles. And then there's just kind of a white, hazy, L.A. smoggy-looking sky. Doesn't look particularly horrific. Do we know how long the Venera probe functioned before it died?
They say that it went on for at least a few hours. At least that's what they say.
That's what they say, right? Exactly. We don't know. It could have run for weeks.
Oh yes, and we have reports of other probes like the European Venus Express of actually lasting about 6 years.
What? When did this land? I didn't hear about this. When did
this
land?
This was an orbiter.
Oh, I see. Okay. I got it. Go ahead.
Crash into the atmosphere to take the final and burn up in the atmosphere.
Yeah, I remember. I remember now. Okay. All right. So we've got, if you look over to the right, you've got a clear panorama of a distant, another mountain range, it looks like. Or these are hills. I don't know what the scale is on this. Now, I'm going to scroll down and take this blue link It's Daniel Martin or Daniel Marin. Let's see what happens if we can get that. It does. It is a hot link, so it's moving. Here we go. All right, it's a Spanish site, and it says the surface of Venus. That's the end of my translation ability.
Oh, yes, I can read Spanish.
All right.
One moment there, and okay. The first picture says the surface of Venus is seen by the Venera 9 in 1975, processed by Ted Strick.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the Venera 9 in 1975, and it had landed in a volcanic plain in the vicinity of a volcano in the central Reggio region of Venus.
Uh-huh.
And so that's a sort of basalt rock there that you're looking at.
Right, right. Not a real estate agent's dream.
No. But the Russians were sending it purposely to this region to study their conjecture that that the planet Venus was geologically active, and so they were hoping to prove that.
All right, let's go down to the second picture. I hope all of you are with us. If you joined late, the third link under Ray's name in guests, take that, open it up, and you'll come down and you'll see a single picture, then three black and white pictures. They're horizontal. They look like strips almost. And then below that in the text is a link in blue on my screen. Take that link, and that will bring you to where we are, which is at Daniel Marin. .naukas, Naukas, Naukas, .com. And this is a display of Venusian landscape pictures. The second one is fascinating.
Yes, this is my favorite. And you notice that there are like moss-type vegetation.
It looks like it, yeah.
Covering the rocks in the crevices. You could see a mountain range that looks kind of like the Uintas or the extension of the Rocky Mountains in maybe Utah or San Cristobal Mountains in New Mexico. And then you see the image straightened out, and you could see that looks like in the upper right, that does look like a kind of duck pond or some.
It certainly does. This again from the this is a Venera craft on the ground on Venus.
And yeah, this was the Venera 10, and it was in an entirely different
location.
Part of Venus,
yeah.
Which shows that the terrain of Venus is variated. Much like on the Earth, because it is about the same size as the Earth.
How interesting. And that certainly looks like a pond. I'm not saying it is a pond, but it certainly looks like a pond. All right, hold on. We'll be right back with Dr. Raymond Keller in just a minute. Okay, back to Dr. Ray Keller, looking at some pictures of Venus, the uninhabitable nightmare planet that is an identical, very close to being an identical planet to our own, but something allegedly happened a long time ago to change it, so we don't see continents and mountains and snow and forests and all that. But we do see some very interesting things. One other thing you said, Ray, that you indicated that maybe the Russians... They had a series of Venusian probes, Venera 10, this is what we're looking at, 10, I think, 13, so on. More probes, remember, to Venus than any other planet in the solar system. That tells you something right there. If it's such a junkyard, why bother? Now, the question is, who was suppressing the photos? The Soviet government?
Well, the Soviets, to our knowledge, only sent four probes to Venus. That was Venera 9 and 10, and then the joint Venera 13 and 14 missions to the volcanic regions that we know of. The other probes apparently didn't have television cameras on board. It was just telemetry that they put together from digital signals.
Well, again, who you said some of the images were marked not to be printed, copyrighted, whatever they were saying.
Oh yes, that was done in the United States by this member of the Planetary Society.
How could we do that? It wasn't our probe, was it?
No, it was. It wasn't our probe, but he processed and used contemporary technology to figure out what a panorama would look like on these 1982 pictures from the Soviet probe.
Right. So that bottom of the three black and white ones, back on your article, that's the one he straightened out. He got the credit for it, so I guess that's it. All right. So when was the last probe sent to Venus? Do we know?
The last one was the Akatsuki probe from Japan. And
results?
That one was an orbiter. At first, it didn't make it. They had to do a course correction, but it sent in a lot of wonderful information and photographs of blue lustrous clouds looking very much like the surface of the Earth.
So they couldn't see through the clouds, but the clouds were blue.
Yes, and the many photos have been taken of that from that probe, and
it is desolate. We got to go with that. It's desolate from the pictures we are allowed to see. But if you look at those pictures, there certainly are areas on this planet that look every bit as desolate. So it doesn't prove or disprove anything.
Yes, and because Venus is the same size as the Earth, the chances of just finding something in an ideal spot is pretty remote, even for the Earth. What was interesting about the Akatsuki probe is that it turned its instrumentation toward the Earth, and they weren't, to see if using the same kind of measurements, if they could detect if life existed here, uh-huh. And they weren't able to do it,
Yeah, interesting. All right. Well, is there anything on the drawing board now as far as another Venusian effort?
Yes, there are actually plans underway to create a high-altitude observing platform in the upper atmosphere, and where they say that the temperatures are moderate and that even astronauts could survive in it, but this is because a section in NASA wants to have funding for
right.
it.
This is an orbital mission, and they're going to try and orbit and at a level in the atmosphere that I guess they'll have to be down into the atmosphere, and they think it's going to be reasonable.
Yes, they say that the temperatures are about 70 degrees, and there's water vapor and so forth. And,
well, it's obviously water, something all over the place. It's probably water vapor, a lot of it. I think what we're saying here is if this species of ours is to survive, and I don't know that it will, in time we could certainly go to Venus and potentially begin to terraform it, like they're already apparently doing with Mars. Certainly they've got many plans to do so. I'm not sure if they're thinking of jumping from here, the controllers, the cartel, to Mars or not, but there's so much water there. When there's a lot of water, remember, water is H2O. O means oxygen. So.
And it's been rumored that NASA officials and others high in the governments of this world have been warned to keep away from Venus because even as back as 1960, Dr. Carl Sagan was proposing that they drop algae into the atmosphere and other chemicals to change the composition and to terraform it. But other scientists warned that was not a good idea because what if the planet is inhabited? They said.
Right. Well, that was a fair statement. That was a kind of a nice. That's good to hear. Don't mess up their home. They're having a good time, maybe. Now, Val Thor, how much? I haven't read Frank Stranger's book, Stranger in the Pentagon. How much of that book really, in your view, relates to Val Thor talking, Val Thor sharing information? Or is it mostly Frank Strange's and his ideas? How many times did he meet with Thor again?
He just met that initially the first
the one time, right?
That one time in the Pentagon, in the bowels of the Pentagon, and then later on at different meetings, he would show up or other Venusians and be in the audience and be recognized by him clandestinely.
Interesting. Okay. All right. Anything else to see on this Spanish site, and we'll go back to your part three.
Yes. Well, and the in the bottom of the page there where they have the Venera 13 and 14 probes, which landed on that volcanic plateau about 100
right.
miles from each other, it actually looks like the ground is wet there, like it had just rained or something.
There's definitely some gradients of dark and light there that do look, they look unusual.
Yes.
It's hard to say. The sky doesn't look anything really much different than an overcast sky down here.
And supposedly, if all the conditions were true about what they say, it should be so dark and obscure that you couldn't see.
It'd be like night down there, right?
Right, because the descriptions would make it the equivalent of 2,000 meters under the ocean.
Huh.
Or be, like at the bottom of the ocean.
Uh-huh. Got it.
Where you can't see anything. And the effects should be that it would totally obscure, and whatever light was there would be contorted and bent.
Right.
And there's no such thing in the few pictures that we have.
Well, after 43 missions, I would think that we should have thousands of photographs in the public domain by now, but it doesn't seem to be that way.
And we certainly have plenty of them of Mars. Well, we do have radar photos of the Venusian surface,
mm-hmm.
and of course, those are the ones that show the planet. Without the cloud cover, but just like if you would aim a radar to the Earth, all we see there is, you could see where the Mariana Trench is, and and the whole Earth as if there were no oceans or ice caps.
We just see the geology, no water.
Yes, all you see is the topography. But when they made adjustments and looked at topographical maps of at least the three of the four inner planets of the Earth, Mars, and Venus, with the same criteria, you see the tops of the mountain peaks are white, and you see that all three of those planets have polar ice caps.
All right, now let's go back to your part three and scroll down to the bottom of it, near the mountains, halfway down, and you'll see a planet. I guess that's Venus. Is that the radar? All right, orthographic view of Venus topography is centered over the North Pole. So we're looking down from the North Pole. That's what we're saying?
Yes, the planet is tilted so that you see the Maxwell Montes region, which is over the North Pole. And then that little dot in the middle of the North Pole in the right region of the upper right region of the snow cap there.
Is that white, supposedly snow cap?
Yes.
We think that is... All right, now wait a minute.
That's the highest peak on Venus. So this is the satellite imagery from the Magellan probe that's tilted over. It's in a polar orbit, and it's looking... Okay. It's actually looking in the... passing over the North Pole.
So that's a ski resort at the North Pole.
Yeah.
Right. So this is an infrared picture. Yes.
Yes, that's right. And what you're looking at is
it's cold.
Is actually cold. And then there are other photographs which show the other peaks around the equator, mountainous region of the equator, to be covered with white as well.
Interesting. And the darker you go, I would assume that's the colder, right? Or is that...
Yes, that's right.
So those could be oceans at one point long ago, deeper areas.
And that continent at the North Pole is as big as Australia, and it's... Mm-hmm. And the mountain is about 6 miles in altitude, so it's the largest mountain range in the solar system.
I can see there is cratering on the surface. It's there. Very interesting. To the left of the ski resort, there's it looks like a wide semicircle, a ridge. Would that be a volcanic rim, perhaps?
Yes. What you're looking over there is on the edge of a massive, so you have a large plateau.
Uh-huh. All right. Very good. All right, what else?
That's the continent Ishtar Terra.
All right. Okay. Now, scrolling down the page further is a Maxwell Montes region at the North Pole. So this is the polar ice cap that we looked at in the color picture. Now we're looking at it in more blacks and whites. We're supposedly seeing?
Yes. And
6 miles high.
That's right. You're 6 miles up. And,
all right. That's 35,000 feet almost.
Oh, yes. And you see in the upper right hand, that's the Cleopatra. It's called the Cleopatra volcano. But it looks like it's filled up with ice and spilling over the sides.
All right. Very interesting. So there, at that height, there is apparently some condensation in the form of snow and ice. Does it change during the year? Do we know? Does it grow and then shrink back?
Oh, it apparently it does, as well as on Mars.
Yes.
That there's actually a constriction when Mars in its elliptical orbit gets closer to the sun.
Okay. Scrolling down a little bit more, polar ice box, prophetic science fiction. Ah, there's Phyllis Diller dressed up as Katy Perry, isn't it?
That is from Disneyland's On Ice.
I don't know what that is. Is that an ice show?
Yeah, that's an ice show.
That's actually a skater?
Yeah, that's a skater from the ice show.
It's not Phyllis Diller. All right.
I thought it was very nice because it's illustrative of this science fiction story that was published about a trip to Venus where they find a frozen world.
Uh-huh.
And what would happen if they landed on the North Pole of Venus? And this story was written back in 1894 by Garrett P. Service, titled "A Columbus of Space." And there's a quote from it about needing fur gloves and looking like so many Eskimos that they were frozen. But this is the illustrative of the Venus Express probe that went there in April of 2006 and did measurements that prove that temperatures at the peak of this large mountain, the Maxwell Mont.
That's 30,000 feet plus. Okay.
Right? Yes, it was was actually more than minus 200 degrees Fahrenheit, and that the atmospheric pressure was at least 40 times less than what anybody had imagined that it would be.
So the
Europeans were a little more forthcoming.
Uh huh. So if you were to find a happy medium from minus 200 Fahrenheit moving down slope, you might find an area that was, you know, reasonable.
Yes, yes, exactly. And, well, Valiant Thor did explain to Frank Strangis, and he did write about that in his book, that there were many areas around the equator of Venus that were not suitable for human habitation, but that the Venusians over that 2 billion year period had moved a lot of their civilization underground into lava tubes and so forth. So it's very consistent with findings that are coming forth.
Very good. I wonder how many Venusians are here. It wouldn't have just been Valiant Thor and his three crewmates. They're probably coming and going all the time.
Yes, they're coming and going all the time. And like George Adamski's contact in Europe, Lou Zinstog, Dr. Zinstog, she was a psychologist and the niece he was the famous psychologist, Carl Jung, even wrote a book about flying saucers, A Modern Myth of Things Seen in the Sky, and he did the theories about the archetypes and so forth, but his niece sponsored George Adamski's tour for in Europe, and did a lot of writing about his case and other contactees, and had commented that there were various safe houses around the Earth for Venusians, and going back all the way to the 13th century to the a Sufi poet and mystic Rumi, he had said that at any time on the Earth, there were at least 4,000 celestial emissaries in one capacity or another.
Huh. Interesting.
But you can imagine that since the dawn of the atomic and space ages, when humankind actually represents a threat into bringing their aggressions into the rest of the solar system, that number has been exponentially increased.
Uh-huh, I would think. Very interesting. Okay, we are talking to Dr. Ray Keller about Venus. And what do you have planned next hour? What do you want to do? We got a lot of material up there.
Oh, yes. We could take a look at some of these communications, this writing that was of interest to Frank.
Mm-hmm.
When I had an opportunity last month to go to New Jersey and to meet with Mr. George Beiler and with Frank for the first time face-to-face, and was sharing some information from my Venus files, especially from the Autobinder files, and they were particularly interested in that article about the different forms of writing from euphonauts that have been discovered over time.
Very good. All right, we'll do that when we come back with Dr. Ray in just a few minutes. Hang on. Look under guests on the left-hand side and look for Ray Keller, and you'll be able to follow right along with us. Back in a minute.